everybody. Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. My co-host, Kurt Hoag, is on the other line. The Milwaukee Brewers, well, fastest team to 50 games in franchise history. The pitching continues to look fantastic. Brandon Woodruff with two great starts this week. The starting pitching looks fantastic.
Thank you.
And Kurt, sometimes what happens on this show, they went 4-2 this week, swept the Reds, took game one against the Cubs. What happens sometimes is that whatever happens Sunday colors our entire conversation. You know, they have a really bad week, so they lose 5 of 6, but they win on Sunday. And then it's like, oh, well, was it really that bad? It was just, you know, they went through a rough patch. I promise the listeners that even though the Brewers very nearly went 5-1 this week, could have won an extra innings on Sunday, I promise the listeners that my intent on this podcast was to come in and say, you know what? That was a bad week of baseball. It was a bad week. It was still 4-2, well, almost 5-1 on paper. Good week of baseball. But you know what, Kurt? You know what? This is a good thing for the Milwaukee Brewers. I believe that we don't need to think of them as a regular season team right now. They're a playoff team. They're going to the playoffs. I mean, 500 teams are going to the playoffs.
Congrats.
Good job, guys.
The Brewers popped the champagne.
Every year you go to the playoffs.
This isn't the first time that we have been the ones to declare, you and I specifically, the ones to declare the Brewers are a playoff team before Major League Baseball declares they're a playoff team.
Yes. This time, mathematically, I can't quite vouch for their case just yet. They will need to win additional games. But I thought they played poorly all week. And if as playoff teams go, they played poorly. And yeah, they won some games. They got really lucky in Cincinnati. They were super duper duper lucky to win even one of those three games. One, you know, I feel like that middle game they probably should have won, but both of the bookends were lucky. You know, the Cubs opener, they played well. And then just a really terrible, terrible loss on Sunday in which the offense absolutely cannot do anything. All that RISP gremlin magic that they had, the runners in scoring position juice that they've had year over year over year. I'm not saying that they're not good at that. They are, but that's the type of thing that dries up when you don't hit for power and you don't slug. And holy smokes, look at June. They absolutely cannot hit with runners in scoring position. The last 2 weeks in particular, that has gone away. They have hit for some power. They haven't been completely devoid, but it's still... they don't look like a playoff team. They don't look like a that's not true. They're a playoff team. They don't look like a team that can win the World Series. Their best hitters are to blame, mostly. They're the guys who are really struggling, I would say. Their bullpen needs, holy smokes, a lot of... We got to talk about the bullpen. It's bad vibes for me. I'm feeling bad vibes. Now, they could easily turn this around. It could be over very quickly. They'll be fine. They are a playoff team. They're going to the playoffs. They're a good team. You should be very proud. That's the team to 50 wins. But, Kurt, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it this week, after Sunday especially. Give me your diagnosis of where we stand with the current Milwaukee Brewers.
I love when you speak.
I mean, we've done this a million times. Like, oh yeah, they went 4-2, but this and that. I mean, people should be really proud of the Milwaukee Brewers. They're fantastic, but I've seen this story a million times. They're amazing in the regular season, and then they look like this. And you're like, that's not going to work in the playoffs. And you know what? It did last year because they actually hit home runs against the Cubs, these Cubs. This is a team that will be prone to this. Will be prone to these where the other team actually makes all the defensive plays and works your pitchers so that they have to be gone by the fifth or sixth inning. And then what do you got? And the Brewers right now, they don't got it.
I love when you speak. Look, everyone, unless this is your first time, in which case, welcome, like, 5 stars. All
oh,
the
I'm
above.
So happy
we
you
gotta,
found
we
us.
Need to say that more, by the way. We got 5. If you're listening, click 5 stars.
Please,
even if you hate us.
Let your friends know, too.
Just do it because we're nice. We're nice people.
If you want to feel good about the Brewers, well, there are other podcasts out there.
There are other podcasts. Just wait. Find an episode that JR's not on. No.
There are many.
That doesn't exist. JR
it's like
is,
2 a year. Maybe one a year.
You are the face of this wonderful podcast.
The face.
That's right. It can be a bald face.
They wasted an Andrew Vaughn leadoff triple. That is offensive to me. The tying run at third base.
As soon as everyone tuned into this, they knew what they were getting in the first 5 minutes. And let me tell you, you did not disappoint.
Bryce Wilson. I'm offended.
Actually, you may have disappointed me a little bit with how much rationality you baked into that.
I have to caveat all the crazy things going through my head. But Bryce Wilson, who wasn't even good in the minors this year, just shut them down for 4 1/3 innings, and twice the Brewers had a runner at third with nobody out and didn't bring that guy in. That's real tough.
So normally in this situation, I tell you in some capacity that you're insane and you got to cool it. I'm not going to do that now, because as I was messaging you while you were at the game and I had a nice afternoon off.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they win this game and they go 5-1 this week, they did not play good baseball. Now, I will contest your claims that they should not have won, like they should have lost the series to the Reds. They deserved to win the series against the Reds because the Reds were worse.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Reds were terrible.
Worse offense, yes.
Yeah, they're bad.
So the Brewers did outplay them, but they didn't. That doesn't mean in any of those games they played well. Now, Brandon Woodruff pitched well. That we got to talk about that, because I think that's in the grand scheme, maybe that's the biggest takeaway from this week.
It is.
And in a 4-2 week, if you want to look at the Brandon Woodruff takeaway and you know, say they're 4-2 and spin it as a positive, you have that right. And maybe I should do a little more to spin it in that way and not let your negativity weigh me down. You would call it realism. But I can't sit here and lie to you, dear listener. The Brewers did not play well this week. They did not play well not in any facet. Their starting pitching was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Their starting pitching was so good that they actually probably should have had a 6-0 week if they played well. But they did not do that. I can shoo away the runners and scoring position problems while also saying that bats were bad. They were not up to par. That's not an acceptable standard for offense, is some of the at-bats that we saw with the runners scoring position. I'm starting to believe the cliche that hitting is contagious. You know, guys in their post-game press conference will say, oh, pitching is contagious. Hitting, whatever you want to be contagious. It's a cliche, whatever. I'm starting to believe it a little bit, that once it's snowballing, there is something to that mental side of the at-bat where it's not good. And so perhaps there was something there, but I just don't have it in me to diagnose that too much, because, you know, they could dink 5 hits in with runners in scoring position on Monday, and they probably will have one of these games against the Reds where they pour it on, and, you know, we'll forget about their worst week of clutch hitting that you and I have probably ever seen. But yeah, there's issues. There's issues right now. And I'm sure you would like to get into those, or would you like to start with the things that are not issues, which is the starting pitching is really freaking good and they're on pace to win 100 games.
No,
would you rather go in that direction?
Let's start with the issues. Oh, I've got things to say about the starting pitching. It's extraordinary. I mean, that's the reason why you still look at this team and you say World Series contender, because if Brandon Woodruff is truly this good, if he's really going to be able to sit 92, 93, hit 94, like I was honestly very dubious about that Red start. I thought that's incredible. I don't know if I believe it. The Reds are so bad. And do I even believe the radar gun readings? But
the Reds were terrible.
Yeah, I don't understand how they
But I don't want to take away from Woodruff and Sproat and what they did. Like, we talked about this on the midweek pod. Yeah, the exact same line. But the Reds were awful. Brewers let them put 22 guys on base in Wednesday's game, and they scored 5 of them. Guys.
And, I mean, they only won that first game because of a wild pitch that got them the second run in extras. That's why they won that game. Now, here's the other problem. I can complain about this all I want. There's no fix. Christian Yelich is in trouble, man. It's going real bad. Bryce Harang in the month of June has 35 strikeouts and 7 walks. Where'd that come from? Well, those guys aren't getting replaced. At least I don't know about Yelich, but Terang is not getting replaced. Jake Bowers is slumping. He's been awesome all year. William Contreras, actually, he's been pretty good.
He's actually been really good in June.
Really good. Yeah, I mean, I can't complain about June. He's looked great. He's where some of the power is coming from. He's up and down, but like, I don't know if that's really a big concern. Cooper Pratt has not been good. We knew that was going to happen. We knew.
Okay. Yeah, we did know that was going to happen. Listen back to last week's episode.
We did.
We told you.
I mean, David Hamilton is what he is. Blake Perkins has actually been good. Like, there's not somebody where you're like, oh, well, if you just replace this guy or trade for this guy. Like, these are their dudes are the guys who are not being dudes. Jackson Chourio has been good, but today on Sunday, he had a really horrendous at bat with a runner, you know, a key runner at third base.
Everyone did.
You're right. It was across the board. It's everyone is slumping at the same time, which also, I mean, I also keep just going back to the 2025 Dodgers. They were not calibrated 100% for the regular season. They were fine for the regular season. They did what they had to do. And then they were their best selves in October. And sometimes I think, who cares if they're bad for a week in June or July or August? They got to be calibrated for October. I guess my point is, you watch what you're seeing and you're like, well, are we sure these are the guys for October? And I think we are.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like we are, right?
No, I think in general, I'm doing a self-assessment.
Oh,
you're perhaps even no, it's not self-help, it's just a self-assessment. You know,
I like it.
Your year-end review meets criteria above the standards.
Love that.
I know you get the 5 stars on your reviews.
I mean, I don't know. I always have things to work on, Kurt. We all have things.
That's
to
true.
Work on.
That's true. You never want to be satisfied. Never.
That's
want
right.
To be satisfied at all.
That's right.
We are hungry, and that's why I have my peanut butter M&Ms that I'm snacking on while we talk about the show. Where was I? Oh, yeah.
I made fajitas after we came home from today's game. My son and I have been to 2 games this year. One was the San Diego game in which the Brewers were 1 strike away from a 1-0 win, only to give up the Gavin Sheets home run. And then today.
Oh, no.
Two of the worst losses of the year. Probably 1 and 2 in some order.
That's tough.
Ugh.
That's rough. Are those the two worst losses of the year? I feel like the Braves loss on Friday was a pretty bad loss.
We do this exercise and I love doing it where we're like, that's the worst loss. Nope, that's the worst loss. Maybe that's the worst loss so far. And honestly, then 2 years later, sometimes I'll be going through these games like, wow, that's a terrible, I don't remember that game at all. This game is so meaningless. I don't remember how it went down.
I generally do remember them, especially... Yeah, but I'll forget like a Saturday's game, which was really 8-2. Like I will completely not remember that game in a few months.
Of course not.
Jared, self-assessment. That's where I was at. Yes. We do a pretty good job of not getting too bogged down in like, you know, the ebbs and flows of baseball. Trying to tell you what's real, what matters, what's impactful, while of course talking about the day-to-day because baseball is a day-to-day sport. We do a pretty good job of that. And you're right. The Brewers are going to the playoffs.
They are.
And as we talk about this, there was some bad in there. But what's important is the bad overwhelmingly concerning that it's going to impact you know, either them making the playoffs or them in the playoffs. And I don't know, some of it this week maybe fits that bill.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the bullpen.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's the thing that maybe does fit the bill, but keep going.
Well, sure. Like I think the impact, what's impactful there as well is not just playoffs, but the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen enough. This is where you have to go. This is where you need to make your team significantly better. Abner Ribe and Trevor McGill right now, absolute dudes. McGill for 2 months now has a FIP that almost starts with a 0. Really hard to do for 2 months. You can be positive, sure.
I just there's just this little thing of positivity. I promise I won't stay here for long. I thought about this today, Sunday, as I'm watching Trevor McGill. They were going to trade him. I think if they had had their druthers, they would have traded him. And holy buckets, it's a good thing they didn't, because that guy, like, after looking pretty tough through April, completely figured it out. What a dude! What an important asset for this team. I think they're in deep, deep doo doo without him. So Trevor McGill, congratulations to you, sir.
Yeah, I mean, they have 2 relievers right now. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Like, if I had to pick, will Aaron Ashby be fine or not? I'm going with he'll be fine. But I can't tell you it with 100% certainty. Like, I feel like that you just trust the stuff, and the stuff is not declining. But he has been shaky. I think that's the best way to describe it. Maybe a month now?
Well,
parts of a month where he's he has had some control issues, some erraticness, some walks are continuing to burn him. I mean, even the outing Friday against the Cubs, came in four or five run game, and then walked the first two guys. Craig Yoho gets shipped out for that.
Craig Yoho gets shipped out for one walk. He walks one guy, he's gone. We're going to talk about Yoho because they have so little faith in him, and I would like to get a little bit more of an explanation. But Ashby,
I think we've gotten the explanation. Like, we have asked about
it's
Yoho.
An incorrect explanation.
We've asked about Yoho so many times for a guy who's pitched like five games this year.
Totally fair. Like, I don't think he's one of their five best relievers in the organization. I don't. However, they said he doesn't throw strikes and he doesn't have a swing and miss pitch. Pat Murphy said that.
Yeah, he did say that after that.
His changeup is a swing and miss pitch. I will not be gaslit into thinking otherwise. He throws strikes. He throws a lot of strikes. They're not all quality strikes. He has been burned. He has had bad outings. He was bad in Cincinnati.
I would contest you on that.
Okay, I'm happy for you to do that. I would like you to do that because he is.
He gave up.
He is a big leaguer.
He gave up a dunk into the outfield on a changeup below the zone at 70 miles an hour off the bat. He walked Ellie in like a nine pitch at bat. I thought Ellie won that at bat. He didn't chase. Nope. And Yoho made some quality pitches in there, just lost it to one of the better
power hitter
players in the league. And then he locked it in for the next two hitters, got two ground outs, one on a changeup, one on a cutter. And look, I don't like coming on here and questioning pitch calling that much. But Pat Murphy did say you can question the pitch call to Spencer Steer, right? The three-run homer.
Yes, yes.
He did not question the pitch call, but he said you can question it. So I'm going to do that. Throw the changeup. It's his best pitch. Throw the changeup. If you get beat on the changeup, you get beat on the changeup. Not 93.
Down the pipe. It was a bad pitch, bad call. Yes.
Certainly not a good location, but I just want to see Craig Yoho. If he's going to go down on contact, either make it, it's got to be like 3-1 and you're just throwing a fastball and a challenge me fastball, but an 0-1, change up. Anyway, I thought he pitched fine. Ashby? Yoho?
I'm going to tie it back to Yoho because here's why I am frustrated about the Craig Yoho situation. Now, first of all, the Brewers know pitching better than anybody in the world. I am confident they know what they're doing. There is some aspect to Craig Yoho's game that they simply do not like. They send him down before they even need to make a roster move. They were very eager to get him down to the minors.
Yeah, but they do that for, I mean, that's not the first time.
Maybe. Yeah,
saves you a day and maybe gains you a day on the back end, but nevertheless, continue.
Chad Patrick is getting lit up right now. That's not their only problem in the bullpen, but something's not right with him. I'm not saying Yoho is better. I am not. But they're in a situation where they need arms. Jared Koenig, back from the injured list. That's great. He pitches on Saturday. On Sunday, in a huge spot, the team doesn't even have him warming up in the ninth and into the tenth when the Cubs have these really good left-handed batters. They don't even have him up.
Why is he here? Why is he here? He pitched back-to-back on his rehab.
Yes, he did.
He's done it.
If
he can't pitch back to back, I understand some cause. Like, optimally, you would not have pitched him today. Man,
sure.
I mean, the Cubs.
But it's extra innings.
Here's the thing. It probably has to do with the Cubs had righties up, and you're thinking if right because it was Swanson got out and Amaya And PCA
was the third guy due up that inning.
But then you've got a righty after that still. So,
yes.
The thinking might be, you take the righties, and if you can hold them to a run.
My problem was not Kunal to start with. It's that once once you got into trouble, once Bregman reached, why wasn't Koenig ready to come in? Like, to face Michael Busch?
Yeah.
And Ian Happ a couple batters after that. I mean, look, I don't want to get too in the weeds on this.
That's fair.
Koenig was not clearly they didn't want to use him. And Joel Kunal, now some of this is post sending down Craig Yoho. I understand why Joel Kunal is here, but 8 2/3 innings, 10 hits, 4 of those are homers, 2 hit by pitches, 6 walks. He's allowed 8 runs, 6 of them are earned. He has in every start either allowed a home run or more batters reaching base than outs recorded. I don't know how much longer that's going to happen. How long can that work? It's only eight innings. Like, I'm not, you know, you can't freak out completely, but like, it hasn't worked once except for in Cincinnati when he locked down a save.
He got locked down two saves in Cincinnati. Speaks with some respect.
He gave up runs in the other one. And okay, made it really, well, really dicey.
He actually pitched. He pitched fine in that one because that was the inherited runner. The only base runner off him was like the infield hit that hit off his glove, I think.
No, he allowed a run in that one. He allowed the inherited runner in the first save. He great inning, worked out.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the second save.
He didn't allow a run. It was 6-5.
Yes, but
he just didn't pitch well. He got the save. He just didn't.
He allowed a bunch of
guys on, and then 105-mile-an-hour rocket right to Cooper Pratt.
You can understand why I'm confusing the bad outings here, but keep going.
Oh, I can understand, JR. Look, oh boy, let's take these glasses off. Let's wipe the brow. How do we want to break this down?
Well, the problem is that there's no solution. They don't have guys, which is why you don't set Rick Hill down. But I digress.
I do love the way you speak sometimes, because I've said this before. I want you, dear listener, comrade, to remember this line that has been spoken before and will be spoken again. The solution ain't in Nashville.
No, man, there's nothing there.
The solution is never in Nashville.
They're trying to fill out pitching staff in Nashville. Like, they're really struggling to get.
Now, there's times where that's not if you have Chris Bryant in Nashville, or if it's next May and Jesus Madé is in Nashville, that's different. It's the same thing as with the Cooper Pratt situation. Cooper Pratt should be called up because you've seen enough of Luis Renjifo, and hopefully this is a chance for him to learn the big league level and the bars on the floor, whatever. But the solution is not Cooper Pratt.
Agreed.
I think we saw that.
We've seen it.
He'll be better this week than he was last week, but
of course
that first week was a great result, but like it wasn't going to last.
Oh, by the way, I have my interview with Cooper Pratt after this. I talked to Cooper after this.
Yeah. He's going through it on his second week of the big level. We don't, you know, it is what it is. That's going to happen. We know it. But JR, the solution is not in Nashville, specifically as it goes for the bullpen. You sent me a message about one of the relievers. I don't remember which one.
I don't know.
In Saturday's game, where you're like, this guy's like,
oh, Patrick. Guy's got
bad, like Nashville might be what like he might just need to work some things out in Nashville.
Yeah,
they can't do that.
You're right.
They cannot do that. I was looking at the Nashville roster today to peruse, because we know who's on the 40 man, who's available.
Drew Rahm, Easton McGee,
but Drew Rahm's not. Drew Rahm's not. Because was sent down on Monday.
Okay, so it's Easton McGee and Craig Yoho, who's not available to come back now for several days because they sent him down incorrectly.
Now, the thing I don't know for sure is getting called up for the 27th man for the doubleheader. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I do know it somewhere in the back of my head. If the 15 days between options applies to being called up for a doubleheader.
Oh, I don't know that, but
I think it does. But I don't remember for sure. We don't play enough doubleheaders here. But they don't, the option's not like Easton McGee is currently the only guy that they can call up. And that's not going to like.
I mean, that's not 100% true.
Grant Anderson, there's not.
You can go off the 60.
You can go off the 40 man as well. Yeah. And JR, I don't know. I was looking at the roster. It's Reese Nair, I think. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I mean, maybe what's his name? Lion Richardson, the guy they just brought into the organization.
It's Reese Nair. It's Reese Nair.
It's not somebody who's going to change the fortunes, the point being,
like that's not. You can be mad about Chad Patrick and mad that he's not pitching well, which that's your right. He's been pitching not well. He's been giving up hard contact like it's his job.
But he's still one.
But what are they gonna do? What are they gonna do? And when you don't trust Grant Anderson, nor should you, and you don't trust Joel Kunal, which they still do.
They trust him.
Maybe not after this one.
I don't know. I don't know about that one. That one was
maybe Jared Koenig flips the view of this a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you're still going with the six-man rotation, and JR, you got to pitch Chad Patrick. if Robert Gasser does not give you length in Monday's start, Abner's down. He went two ups yesterday.
Yeah.
Ashby might be down for going two ups.
Ashby's been worked and is
struggling.
McGill's
pitched two of three. Oh, he could pitch tomorrow. He probably is available. Probably has to be available. But like, you got to pitch who you got. Like,
well, that's where you're talking about. They need to add. They need to add somebody. They need to go get somebody, and probably sooner rather than later. If they're going to get to the All-Star break alive, they are.
Well, sure, maybe.
I don't know how they can physically.
Maybe there's
do
someone.
This.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be shocked if they find someone. In
like
the meantime,
they found Kunal.
Yeah. Now, generally, that doesn't work out great. But then again, JR, back to the way you had contempt in your heart to begin this episode. I just watched David Peterson and Bryce Wilson shove it.
David Peterson, who was jettisoned from the Mets. Bryce Wilson, who, like I said, just added to the Cubs, not even good in the minors, former Brewer, 4 1/3. I mean, it's not like the Brewers didn't hit him. They did a little bit. They didn't score any runs on him. Terrible at-bats in some really big spots from some really important hitters. And then, of course, we haven't even said it out loud, but in the 10th, they had scored a couple runs thanks to Cubs wildness. Bases loaded, nobody out. 4-3 is the score. You are within a run, and they find a way once again to not score for the second time on Sunday, runner at third with nobody out. In addition to a runner at third with one out, none of them scoring. Really, really tough.
There has to be something there. There has to be something to that this week. It just snowballed so bad. I can't remember. Like the homestand against the Blue Jays, maybe it was like the offense was just in a really bad spot.
Yeah,
the at bats this week were as bad as I've seen them in a very long time. It was like the Dodgers series, except you weren't facing Yamamoto and Blake Snell. You were facing a cavalcade of Blue Savant bars.
This is not. They didn't play any pitchers this week. They didn't face anybody.
No, that's another thing that.
And they scored very few runs.
They almost went 5. I need to say that as much for myself and maybe for you and your well-being as well.
Yeah, they're one well-timed hit away from 5.
But
and
you ain't gonna face a group of starting pitching this middling for the rest of the season, probably. Maybe
what
like
they were
the
facing.
Rockies come into town, but they like here's the list, right? Brady Singer, Nick Lodolo, Rhett Lauder. Colin Ray, who pitched David Peterson, Bryce Wilson. Those were the starters or bulk guys in those outings. The guy who was having the best year, I think, out of all those coming in was Colin Ray, and his ERA was like 4.9. So
it's probably Lauder, I guess. I don't know what Lauder's at.
Lauder's numbers were not very good either.
Dude.
So.
Dude, and they scratched and clawed.
Yeah, it was just a bad week. It was just a bad week.
I mean, you get picky and choosy, but like
they didn't scratch and claw for their runs. Their runs were like bang. It was loud. When they scratched and clawed, they were like a cat that got flung across the room.
They were trying to scratch and claw their way up a wall and it wasn't going very well. They were stuck in neutral. I mean, even in the game against the Reds that they did win, where they held on for dear life. Andrew Vaughn's 3-run double, which just barely is fair inside the third baseline. Now, I don't want to just, you know, whatever. It's a 3-run double. That's exactly what you want. And they were hitting home runs. Like you said, it's exactly what you want. But I feel like they were even closer to, yes, they were almost 5-1. They could have been 1-5, man. They really could have. Maybe 2-4. I don't know. And who cares on the 1 week? That's not the issue. The issue is this a team that you could see winning the World Series? And right now it's not.
Oh, no. Big time. Well, so
in the past it has been though. And the pitching is still so good. The starting pitching.
Yes. I'm going to stick with my answer to start the week. And actually it's only been bolstered by how Brandon Woodruff looked. I'm still going. Yes.
So good.
You can say something about the offense and then I'll probably nod here and go, okay, yeah, this guy's got a point. But boy, Brandon Woodruff, didn't see it coming. Did not see that version of Brandon Woodruff coming in. You know, maybe we should have. Maybe we should have, because just about every time that he has been healthy and pitching, he's been effective. The question, of course, is if he's going to be healthy the rest of the season. That's a fair question, given his history and what we've seen the last few years. But, boy, you have Woodruff and you have Harrison and you have Miz, you got three right there. You don't necessarily need to use your assets to go get another one. You've got other holes on this team. Like in the bullpen, you need at least two guys. That's good. Like this team is built around, I'm not going to say the cliche, built around pitching and defense. I think they're theoretically built around pitching and defense. And now they're built around starting pitching, but that's a story for a different day. They're built around their starting pitching and Brandon Woodruff being legitimately good. It's 93. I mean, he threw like 20 something fastballs at 93 or above today. It clearly plays, and that makes the outlook funnier on the overall roster picture, because you don't think about this as I'm saying it. You don't win a World Series with 18 through 26 on your roster. You win it with like 1 through 8. And now you need a whole team to get through it all. You need, you know.
Yeah, 1 through 8 with a surprise.
Some guys to do something. But like last year, the Brewers didn't win because Freddie wasn't good enough. And Yelich wasn't good enough. And Contreras wasn't good enough. And, I mean, you could point to anyone on the offense, but and also they didn't have enough starting pitching on that 1 through 10. Like, Quinn Priester wasn't good enough, but that's because he just wasn't good enough. Yeah, and hurt. Like, I don't know. That's a theory I'm testing out on the fly now. But, like, the point being, you're not going to win the World Series anyway if Jose Quintana is making starts for you in the NLCS. You're probably not going to win the World Series.
That's true.
Things could bounce your way, but Lord knows things don't bounce in the Milwaukee Brewers' way. They kind of got to make their own luck in the postseason.
The Brewers are wasting Brandon Woodruff's post prime. Let me ask you about one of those. Let me ask you about one of those 1 to 10 guys, because honestly, I don't think I'm worried about any of the top 10 guys except one, and that's Christian Yelich.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday's not the day to be too concerned. He had a couple hits. He hit the ball well, another at-bat where he almost got a hit. Like, I mean, I don't think there's any scenario where this team will sit him. I just cannot envision that happening. But with the loss of bat speed, the vulnerability to breaking pitches that we've seen, he feels the overall numbers aren't even that bad. It just doesn't look like you can rely on him right now to be consistent. And I wonder if there is a scenario where they say, you know what, we're going to give you more breaks during the week. We're going to give you a couple games down or three games down during the week. I don't think so, but I don't know, Kurt.
Well, they gave him two games down this week against two lefties. Sure, they sat him.
They sure did.
That might be the best way forward, especially if you do have, you know, two first basemen that you'd like to play. And while South Frelick hasn't been great, maybe he's capable of playing baseball. Anyway, I don't love baseball savant analysis.
Okay.
I don't love reducing the game to these bars, because there's a lot more numbers that matter, but I'm going to do it here because I think this is the best way to paint the picture for why you should be concerned. And look, your eyes tell you from Yelich at bats, judging by my mentions in my email, people's eyes are telling them they are concerned about Christian Yelich. His expected batting average, 18th percentile. Expected slugging percentage, 28th percentile. His bat speed is 61st percentile, which is good, but it's down from 68th percentile last year. It's not great. His chase percentage, he's still not chasing, that's good, but his whiff rate, JR, is 15th percentile, which means there's a lot of in-zone swing and miss. A lot of in-zone swing and miss. He's striking out 27.8% clip. And here's one actually that I think might be most telling for why I have some worry, and we talked about our worry about him on the last episode as well. I'm not in an entirely different spot than I was then, but a little more now that I've seen it for another week. His sprint speed is in the 47th percentile. It's down to 27.2. What do they do? That's feet per second. Last year he was 71st percentile, so he's dropped a foot per second there. He was 80th percentile in sprint speed 2 years ago. You can see it a little with the bat speed as well, but if he's just not moving as well, and sometimes that happens. Obviously, he's got the back injury. Things happen to the body, and those numbers aren't good. Those numbers aren't good. I still do think that he will find a way to be productive, to remain productive. But when it's a designated hitter, when it's your leadoff hitter, you just would like a little more than, you know, basic productivity. And he struggles against sliders and sweepers and breaking stuff, and hasn't exactly been squaring up fastballs super well either. So
I
don't know. It would not shock me if, you know, he goes out and has a great week. It could happen at any point. He turns it around. But on the other hand, what's the basis for thinking that, you know, expecting that to happen other than he's done it before? Like this, the numbers, you know, the underlying stuff from this year is not super encouraging in that realm.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into some of the more granular details from the week that was. It is our weekly segment. Three up, three down. Kurt, I'd like you to go first because my favorite story of the week was yours, coming from Friday night's game. I don't know if you wanted to use this in one of your three up, three down, but just pretty emotional game. Win over the Cubs. William Contreras with a big home run. Some crazy scenes. So tell me some things. Tell me some things about the Friday night
game. Some things about the Friday night game. What do we want? Where do we want to go with this?
I mean, in the aftermath of this earthquake in Venezuela, I am. Some emotional stuff.
Yeah. It was quite the night, to say the least. And how do I put this? Like, those guys have to do their job. They have to play baseball. And it feels ridiculous that they have to do that in a way. But, like, and I think they would tell you this too, though. Like, that's what they have to do. There's no other way around it. There's, you know, like they can't go to Venezuela. They can't. But it puts a lot of things in perspective, and it makes you understand and kind of take a second to realize how hard they have it. And it's obvious how hard they have it that night. You could see it in William Contreras. You could see it in his chest protector. But they have it hard a lot more than I think we realize. And it's not just those players too, right? It's like the thousands of players who aren't from here, who don't speak the language, who play in the minor leagues, and they aren't in the big leagues. They don't have millions of dollars and nice homes and other things to their name to make their adjustment and you know, life easier. So the Venezuelan earthquake side of it, like, I don't even think it needs, like, you don't even need a ton of explanation all you really need to, you know, have to feel something about that or like understand sort of as much as you can understand what those guys are going through. All you need is like a little bit of humanity and a little bit of empathy. And I would hope everyone has that. And I think people did, people showed that and expressed their support on Friday night. But it's like, I don't know. I just, to me, in the conversation I had with Churio after the game, that was one of the more overarching themes, is like, it's not easy. It's not easy. And obviously it's incredibly difficult to be away from Venezuela right now. And like, they're doing what they can to help, but you want to be with your family. You just want to be home. And you can't. I can't even speak to it. Incredibly challenging. But then there's just like this underlying element of, it ain't easy. This whole, you know, their whole life is I don't want to say difficult because they're big league baseball players, but there's just things that you and I can't necessarily relate to. We may not be able to relate to the money that they make, but there's a whole lot more. I think I wrote this in my story, like homers, you know, don't take away homesickness. That's sort of kind of one of my takeaways. And boy, oh boy, you can empathize with them for sure for how homesick they are right now.
Yeah. Of course, the Brewers have a ton of talent hailing from Venezuela. Certainly Contreras and Churio. Angel Serpa, one of their relief pitchers, man, they could use him right now.
Luis Lara
and Nestor Corredor, who's part of the big part of the Brewers coaching staff, Venezuelan. So yeah, it's a crazy circumstance. My number one said some mean things about Joel Kunal, but Wednesday night was kind of a wild ride in Cincinnati. He came in, he was gassed, man. He was out of energy. He'd already had an up and came back into the game and gets the final outs, gets a double play to secure a win. Crazy that there were two sides of the coin here for the Brewers this week. On Wednesday, felt pretty certain that the Reds were about to win, were about to rally back from a 6-1 deficit, I believe, and win. But the Brewers get a double play to end the game with the winning run on third, or tying run on third, I should say. And then likewise, in reverse on Sunday, where the Brewers had bases loaded, nobody out, then with one out and got a double play to lose the game with the tying run at third base. But Joel Kunal, who says himself he's not an emotional guy, really got into that one, very excited to have survived that game, getting the sweep against Cincinnati. Reds did not play well in the series, but obviously anytime you can, you know, take a divisional foe to the cleaners, you will do it. That is good news for the Milwaukee Brewers. So a nice little escape job for Joel Kunal, helps the Brewers hold off what would have been a pretty disappointing defeat after building the lead that they built to have lost it. And, you know, two saves this week. He
sure did.
I mean,
he sure did have two saves.
I've already said the performance was not good, but he did have two saves this week, and they were both pretty thrilling finishes. So yeah. I guess we have that.
JR. I've given up on Garrett Mitchell analysis. I have.
How about the analysis of, oh, he's hurt his hamstring. Clearly he's going to be out for a long, long time. And then he plays the next day, finishes the at bat, and plays the next day.
Well, he also hit the game winning, beside me, go ahead homer, the big swing in Friday night's game on a cutter at the top of the zone. He has improved in that regard. He still swings and misses at nearly a 40% clip against fastballs up, but he would not be the only guy that swings and misses at a 40% clip at fastballs in that area. Like, that would no longer be a death knell. And clearly it's not a death knell for him, because let's pull up the numbers, shall we? Garrett Mitchell, Fangraphs, in 211 career games, he's at a 113 WRC plus. He has been worth 4.5 wins above replacement. It sort of is something I can't even break down anymore. And I just say, you know what? This guy might be able to get it done. It's not going to look how you want it to look, but he might be able to get it done. With the more playing time he gets, the less sure I am of what my analysis is, other than he's getting the job done.
I think it's a little bit like everyone expecting Jacob Izurowski's arm to fall off. It's like, you just expect at some point, you know, he's going to hit a wall. He's going to get hurt.
Which, why are we doing this? Why?
I don't know. We don't have to. I'm not doing that. I have moved on from that.
No, but if you are thinking of going into someone's mentions when Jacob Izurowski is throwing 105 and saying something about his arm falling off, don't do that. Don't do that. We don't need that. Let's enjoy what's happening. I know arm injuries exist. Chances are every pitcher is going to have something happen to them. Let's not be that person.
But it's similar, and now Mitchell hit a career high for games played in the season this week, which he was very excited
about. Brent Suter blew out.
Yes. There are plenty of guys who throw 89 who needed reconstructive arm surgery. We all know it's on the table. Throwing 107 probably slightly increases that chance, but not enough to really have it preoccupy your thoughts.
Also, he might, like, and I'm not saying he's never going to, you know, have any injuries, but, like, he might be a unicorn. Like, his body might be able to handle this a lot better than other guys' bodies.
Well, Verlander for a long time. Mm-hmm. Justin Verlander threw hard, was dominant, didn't need arm surgery until late into his career. Now, anyway, back to Mitchell. He got that hamstring tweak on what is Saturday night, last at bat of a game that was pretty much over. And immediately it's like, there's no way, you know, Luis Lara is going to get called up tomorrow. There's no way he's going to be playing again for a while. Like, you just have that constantly hovering. And then, I mean, if you had told me he'd be playing on Sunday in any capacity, I would have put odds at that at like 10%, but he made it through. I mean, maybe that's the next step, is having a minor injury and being able to play right through that and just move on. Which goes back to your original point. Whatever Garrett Mitchell's going to give the Brewers at this point, you just got to kind of live with it. You got to be satisfied with it. He is their best center fielder. He is therefore a very valuable commodity on defense, and he can hit the ball, man. He can hit the ball. It's not always going to be pretty. There are going to be games like the one in Vegas where it was 15-14 and that man went 0-6. How did he go 0-6? No one knows. That's a mystery. But then he came back and had three hits, including two extra base hits the next day.
Because this is how it goes.
That is how it goes. That is Garrett Mitchell right now. Okay. You know what I was going to say about that Garrett Mitchell home run is that it very nearly didn't happen, because the Brewers very nearly got caught in a triple play situation. They had two on. It was Contreras on second, Bowers on first. Andrew Vaughn hits a screamer right back to reliever Ethan Roberts, who just checked into the game. He snares it, flips to second immediately to get Contreras. Now Bowers gets back. It wasn't obvious they were going to get out of it, but he got back. And then Mitchell, with two outs, next batter hits that two-run homer to give the Brewers the lead. A couple crazy moments on the base paths against the Cubs. There was that one.
Oh, yes.
And then there's the one where Jackson Chourio just got deked. Got deked by Dansby
Swanson. I don't think he got deked.
I don't know what that was, but Dansby Swanson,
I don't think Dansby knew what he was doing. I don't know if they talked to him after the game.
Interesting take.
He wasn't like looking at Chourio. Maybe the Dansby Swanson is a great defender, so maybe he did know what he was doing. But to me, he just looked like a guy who went up and grabbed the ball, and then 3-3-3, and then he looked up and come up throwing.
I interpreted that as he just did something that he's done a lot of times, which is, pretend that the ball is getting away, and then kind of half-heartedly, you know, just assumes it's not going to get anybody because, you know, he's sliding, he's on the ground at that point. But then Jackson Chourio got up and started running. I thought that was Dansby Swanson being like, wait, seriously? You're going to, okay. And then threw to third and got the out. But you may be right. You may be right that he was just hanging on for dear life, not thinking about it. And then it materialized.
I don't think he was deliberately trying to like hit and ball Chourio.
Yeah.
But maybe the truth is in the middle, where he also wasn't deliberately not
sure
trying to, like, somewhere in the middle, and Chourio just.
Anyway, veteran play. Nice play one way or the other.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, he definitely fooled him, whether meant to or not. He fooled him. And yeah, that's all that matters. All right, JR, I'm going to wrap up mine with number three. I'm looking at the minor league box score right now.
Oh, hello. I know where you're going. You're going to Nashville.
I'm going to the land of hot chicken. Logan Henderson, three innings, one hit, one walk, seven strikeouts. So Pat Murphy did say in Cincinnati that Henderson has still been dealing with a little, like, some back soreness.
So weird.
So we'll see how he recovers from this outing. Because if it's well, and then he makes another one and goes four ups and recovers well from that, I've seen enough.
I've certainly seen enough. And you know what? That's good for the Brewers rotation, but I think about it more for the bullpen. Maybe Henderson, yes, because he's got this. It's, yes, the bullpen. But if it's not, it's, yes, throwing. Like, they're going to get, right, better in the bullpen.
We did not discuss this to the bullpen element, where, yes, they need arms, but they need Shane Drouin.
Yeah.
They need Shane Drouin. I mean, Chad Patrick, you know, was incredible there for a while, But I don't think Shane Drone has like a wheels falling off to this level in the bullpen in him. I just don't think that's who he is as a pitcher. His profile, just, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think Shane Drone in the bullpen right now would be massive, and he could be if the Brewers actually wanted to go with a five-man rotation. Now they have to sneak someone in for St. Louis, and maybe the fact that they don't have like a 40-man option to make that start just makes them go with the six-man. Otherwise, they would go five. I'm not entirely sure. Like, it would make a lot of sense with how the roster is set up right now to put Drone in the bullpen, but I get why they're doing what they're doing. Yeah, he's been pretty good as a starter, but I think for this iteration of the Brewers, that's a potential impact player.
All right, my number three, I'll go to the minors as well. You know I love the minor leagues. Luis Peña is back, the number two prospect in this organization.
He pulled tonight.
He gets pulled a lot. That's not unusual. I think they're just trying to like ease him back in. He had a hamstring issue that he left the game June 9th and then didn't come back again until this week. This is the same player who was twice removed from games with what was exhaustion, overheating. Terminology is weird. It's definitely something to watch, I feel, throughout the course of the season. Luis Peña's availability. He looked really hyped up in the dugout in the game where he didn't play this weekend. So, like, he looks fine, but yeah, it was good to see him back out there. He did have another double this weekend. He always produces when he's in there. That's either just speaks to his talent or I don't know, but it was pretty great to see him back after the latest ailment. One other minor league note, Andrew Fisher has 4 homers in 2 weeks at AA. This is a fascinating player because he strikes out a whole heck of a lot. Great interview with Andrew Fisher this week. Was that Fair Territory? I think it was.
Foul Territory?
Sorry, I get them all
confused. Could at least Fair get territory. It right. Jeez.
Oh, jeez. Foul Territory is the bros. Fair Territory is Ken. Brewers Territory is Kurt. Okay, I'll get it. I'll get it all someday. The territories. Lengthy interview with him where he talks about his process. You get honestly, like hearing him talk about it made me feel a little better about it. The volume of strikeouts that he has racked up in the minor leagues, both at Wisconsin and now at Biloxi. You know, it's I think a combination between he's just working on it, but also not really using a B swing very much. Just like I'm going up trying to hit the ball as hard as I can, and we'll work on it. We'll get through it, and we'll change our process as we get closer to the big leagues. It feels like that's where we're headed with that, because the man mashes, just crushes baseballs. Hit one on a roof this week, on top of a roof in right field. Just unbelievable work by him. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he's trying to do one thing, and he is doing it. His contact rate has been a little bit better.
It has.
High A, it's up. He's still striking out a crap ton, but his contact rate coming into the day was 72%. It was at 62% in high A, which that's not going to fly.
It is not going to work. That's not going to work. Yeah, we'll see. He still gets on base a ton. But you know, you don't want this guy to be a 3-TO guy when he gets to the big leagues. That's not going to work. So,
but he is. It might work.
Right now he is.
Well, it might work.
Not when one of the TOs is that prominent, but we'll see. Okay, what didn't we talk about in 3-up, 3-down? Joey Ortiz had a nice game on Monday. He had a sacrifice fly that gave the Brewers the lead, and then he made a beautiful sliding play. This was with Joel Kudel on the mound to beat the Reds in extras to seal that off. Third base defense, pretty nice when Joey Ortiz is out there and Cooper Pratt is at shortstop. The Brewers did not have an all-star in the final round of voting. We're going to find out pretty soon who the starters are. That should be coming this week. The Brewers will not have one, at least not except maybe starting pitcher, which is through a different process. Stay tuned about that. We'll see if that's going to be happening for Jacob Mizorowski. Is Jake Bowers going to be an all-star ? I still feel like there's a chance, but just too many stars at first base. I feel like it's going to be really, really tough. Abner Uribe finally served his suspension. What a weird thing. They could just draw it out with this appeal forever. And then in a situation where he pitched like 4 times in 5 days, they had a settlement. I don't know what that is, but they finally decided, oh, now is the day he's going to serve it. Yeah, because he wasn't going to pitch anyway. Super weird, but whatever.
I think that if we're reading between the lines here.
Yeah, that, I'd like to.
He didn't settle on the games. But if the official word is it was a settlement agreement, they had to settle on something. Yeah. So it's got a financial.
I guess. The Reds leaving Sam Mall, a left-hander, in to face Andrew Vaughn late in that game.
What were they doing? That's number two on my what was he doing list of Brewers opponents this year. Number one will forever be Tim Hill. What was that guy doing?
Why would you throw to third, sir? What were you doing?
And Terry Francona, our hypothesis in the press box while it was happening was like, they had, we can't see who's warming up. They had just announced in the press box that Antone was warming up. Like,
That's right.
At the end of the last at bat.
I think they got him up just a little late.
So it was late. And then Vaughn's answer after was like, yeah, Antone wasn't really up until I was in the on-deck circle. So I figured he wouldn't be ready. So I figured I was facing lefty. I was like, oh, man. Oh, no, Terry. Oh, no, Terry. No, no, don't. No, not like this. Not like this. What do you mean? What do you mean you were leaving the left? Vaughn was going to hit. What do you mean you were leaving the lefty in through Frelick? What do you mean? Bring in the righty. You know Vaughn's going to hit.
Andrew Vaughn mashes lefties. Bases clearing double in a game that the Brewers won 6-5. That worked out real nicely. Okay, that's it. Let's now go back in time. My weekly segment looking back at Brewers history. It is Remember When. Kurt, one thing we haven't talked about is Pat Murphy this week. He had back surgery and was right back on the off day and was right back in the dugout. Now he was like immobile a little bit, not, you know, at first it sounded like he was going to manage from a remote location, but he was there. He was around. So he's a gamer, fighting through it. Pat Murphy is. It did get me to think about, I guess, a more serious case of this, which dates back into Brewers history. George Bamberger, who is woefully underappreciated in Brewers history. He is not on the Walk of Fame. That is, in my opinion, really stupid. If you have a Walk of Fame vote and you listen to this, please tell me why you're not voting for George Bamberger. He's like the first good manager this organization had. He's just as accomplished as Harvey Keene, who, yes, led the team to the World Series, but like he turned this team around so fast in 1978 when he was hired. It's funny because everyone knows Bambi's Bombers. George Bamberger is known for having, known for having like this incredible offensive team, but he was a pitching coach from the Baltimore Orioles. And he worked under Earl Weaver. They won the 1970 World Series. And he's hired by the Brewers in 1978 by Harry Dalton, who had also been with the Orioles, the general manager, now with the Brewers. Immediately, the Brewers have a 26-game turnaround. George Bamberger, I always picture as like this old guy, you know, gray hair, cool smile, like just an old gregarious guy. When he started with the Brewers, he was 55 years old. That's a full decade younger than when how old Pat Murphy was when he started with the Brewers. So age is a weird relative thing. Under him in 78, Mike Caldwell's awesome all of a sudden. Larry Sorensen has a really good year. The Brewers pitching really took a step forward, and boom, first winning season in Brewers history. They're good again in 1979. 1980 rolls around. By the way, this Bamberger, he was a guy who would like show up at tailgates. This would never happen today. Pat Murphy, love that man, and I know he's a man of the people, but he would not go out to the parking lot and tailgate after a game. I don't think any manager would. That's probably a bad idea, quite honestly. Not for George Bamberger. Back in the 80s, he could do it. But in 1980, he has a heart attack in spring training. And he ends up needing quintuple bypass surgery. So he is out to start the 1980 season. Buck Rogers takes over on an interim basis for the Brewers. He does try to return in June that year. He doesn't, however, last the season. By early September, he's like, I can't do this. I'm giving the job back to Buck Rogers. So that's kind of how it ended up. And Bamberger never came back. He ends up taking the New York Mets job in 1982, that didn't really go great. Buck Rogers gets replaced midseason by Harvey Keene in 1982. That was a pretty famous move because Keene, of course, and the Brewers turn it around and they go to the World Series. But Bamberger came back. They're so bad. He resigns in 1983 from the Mets, comes back 1985, and he's with the Brewers. Teddy Higuera, that's his rookie season. He has a great year. Again, a pitcher having a great season under George Bamberger. But the Brewers were not the same team that they were in the early 80s and late 70s. He gets fired in late 1987. He ultimately retires for good. The heart attack didn't hold him back. He passed away at age 80 in 2004. So he had a long life after that. And he is a really great character in Brewers history. I don't know why he's not on the Walk of Fame. It's like people, honestly, he's a heart attack away from leading that team to the World Series. They go to the World Series under George Bamberger. Harvey Keene, who also weirdly was like interim manager in 1975 too. So like he also had two stints, but Harvey Keene, great guy. Everyone loves him, but I really don't think people appreciate how important George Bamberger was to the turnaround of the Milwaukee Brewers in the late 70s and 1980s. Gamer came through some pretty serious health stuff to manage the Brewers in a couple stints. All right, that's it. That's our look back in time. Now let's close this puppy down the way we do every week, and that is with Kurt's Take of the Week. Here it is, Kurt Blom.
Can I admit something embarrassing to you and our dozens of listeners?
That's a very loaded question, but I'll say yes.
I didn't know what a Harvey's Wallbanger was a drink.
Oh, that's interesting.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Guess what? A Boilermaker. A Boilermaker is also a drink. I just want you to know that, just in case.
No, that's a Purdue player.
We'll talk later, but keep going. You were in St. Louis. Did you order one?
I saw it on there. No, I did not, because I this is how I learned it, though. It's got the liqueur, the licorice.
Yeah.
Basically, flavor. Yeah. That ain't for me.
No.
But that's not what's important. What's important is I learned at that moment that, wait a second. I was like, wait, did like Harvey Keen always come here?
That's where the name comes from. That's the play on words.
Like, they're in the American League. Did he just, was it World Series? Maybe he came to this. It was a really nice Italian. It was a great Italian place.
Yeah. They were going to try to do a variation of Harvey's Wallbangers, and Cecil Cooper was the guy who was like, no, let's keep it simple. We're Harvey's Wallbangers. They just went with that.
That's awesome.
Of course, they led the league in hitting the ball over the wall, so it's not like a perfect fit, but still.
No, that's why it's great. It makes sense now. I get it. That's not my Kurt Blanche, though. I just had to.
I know.
I don't think I told you that yet, and so I'm telling you and dozens of others that now.
I forgive you.
Uncultured swine.
I forgive you.
That I am. JR, I hope everyone's happy.
Well, I'm not.
Well, that threw me off.
I don't know why I said that out loud. That's probably patently false, but like, I don't know. I just.
No, this was a bad week. Not for the Milwaukee Brewers, who went 4-2, and famously nothing was wrong with it.
At 50 wins, and they were threatening for the best record in baseball.
It was a bad week in Milwaukee.
Oh,
God. I hope that everyone's happy, because you know what? None of us are. And you know who matters in this situation, JR? Us. The people. Us. You and me. You and me. The fine Milwaukeeans, the fine Wisconsinites, the Sconnies, the Wiscos.
Oh,
the Wiscos. That's what people are.
Not a
they
thing.
Wore them
not,
on Saturday.
Not a drink. Not a drink.
So someone on Saturday was like, you know what? I'm coming around. I was like, I'm not. Anyway. The people that matter in this situation, they got lost. They got lost. They were pushed to the side. And I mean, Jim Ozarski did masterful job. Yeah. Is that even good enough of an adjective to describe the job he did in laying bare the 3 to 4 year divorce? Of course, I'm talking about Giannis and the Bucks. And even after reading it, you know, I'm still in the space I was when I was in Cincinnati late night and got the notification, as we all did, of. I understand all the little things that led to this. I don't believe them. I just can't believe it. I can't believe this happened. If there was a basketball player who was built to break the mold and be the Dirk, can't even think of another. Like, what's another analogy of this? Dallas isn't a small market, but you know what I mean? They're not a marquee franchise star.
Yeah,
who played his entire career in one spot. That doesn't happen in this league. Like, the NBA is constructed for you to go to one of 5 or 6 teams. We all know that. But it felt JR
back, but whatever.
Sure. Who's the biggest player in the last 20 in the 2000s? The biggest player that hasn't played for any of those franchises is Jokic.
Yeah, it is.
Or Dirk. I mean, Dirk. And that's Dirk. What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Giannis was
special.
those guys all they all go there at some point. Golden State's in there too.
I would just say I don't think the NBA is uniquely equipped to funnel talent to the best to the biggest and best markets. Certainly no more than other sports are, which I think are all pretty
well. It's certainly more than the NFL.
Well, yes, you're right because it's a hard cap, but I don't know.
I think it's more than baseball too. Now, sure, the Dodgers and Yankees have their way, but baseball is just a different game.
Yeah, it's a very difficult comparison there.
My point being here, it seemed like up until I don't know what the breaking point was. You can probably go through that story and you know come up with your own idea of it. But until whatever that breaking point was, that's it, in my mind. And maybe I deluded myself thinking that. That the Bucks and Giannis could actually stay together forever. I just thought that was going to be the case, JR. Maybe it was delusion.
No.
But up until Giannis's tone maybe started changing a little bit, what, like maybe two media days ago? Is that kind of when?
Maybe.
It started flipping. And obviously there's other things, you know, around that that led to that. And a lot more happened after that. But I just hope everyone's happy. I hope everyone's happy because there's a lot of people who got left feeling kind of screwed in this divorce. Those are my thoughts. I wanted to get them on a baseball podcast since you didn't invite me to pontificate and opine on your Point Forward podcast.
Well, yes, the Point Forward audio is played on the midweek podcast, so we did discuss a little bit of Giannis, and I brought up the Game 6 of the 2018 NLCS, which was an interesting comparison point, because that was the same night that Pfizer Forum opened, and the Bucks started kind of building their way toward what they ended up getting in 2021. A little bit of a tease, I have a kind of an essay column that discusses some of that.
Oh. And
talks a little Brewers in addition to Bucks, so we'll see. I think that might run Monday. I think that might be there right away on Monday as you're hearing this, but in any event, I talked about that briefly on the midweek. It is a bummer. I think, Kurt, having read all this, I think we were always headed here. You're talking about ownership that is maybe not quite perfect in handling this stuff, and I'm also not positive the player knew what he wanted. I think he did know what he wanted in parts, but he wasn't fully cognizant of what his various moves would do.
You can't tell me that. Well, no, he didn't know what he wanted in terms of like the Bucks.
He knew what he wanted. He just didn't know what it took to get it. Like, oh, okay, we can get a superstar, but we have to trade Drew to get Dame Lillard. And I don't think like that didn't work for him ultimately after the fact. It worked as an idea.
But you know what he wanted through 2022, which was to be a Milwaukee Buck for his entire career.
Yeah.
And obviously that changed at some point. And I'm not doing a pie chart of blame. I'm not doing that. What happened happened. Oh, and you can't take you. Well, I'm not doing
that. Sounds like a really good idea.
Maybe on the next episode. Maybe not the next episode, but I also don't want to do that because like then you're putting blame, because there would be blame on the player in this situation, putting blame on the greatest, you know, the greatest player in franchise history who actually did the dang thing. He did the dang thing. Like the Bucks, the dirty secret is they weren't going to do the dang thing again with him, and they ain't going to do it without him either.
No, they had a better chance with him. But.
I mean, they would have been better. You know, you can probably sustain, at least take a crack at it or whatnot. But so really, you're just, you know, losing out on some more years of like sentimentality and like he's
a
great player, and that's what sucks. But they did the dang thing.
Yeah. Jim said something that we'll close it here. Jim said something that I found interesting. He said, I think history will remember this more fondly than you might think, because the NBA, what it is built to do right now is to not let teams win for long stretches of time. It's very difficult to build a dynasty the way the money works. So winning one title, as we've seen, what is it, 8 years in a row with different teams winning the title. It's like, you'll appreciate that, because there aren't going to be many teams that do better than that. So maybe it'll be all right.
Buddy, let me tell you, I was in Milwaukee in the summer of 2021, and I was not covering baseball, so I had a lot of free time. Actually, I was covering preps in the summer.
When there's lots of free sports going on. Yeah, that's great.
Lots of free time.
That's great.
I think I enjoyed it. I do not count me in the subclass of people who say the Bucks or Giannis underachieved in any capacity.
Yeah.
Now, would it, you know, would it look better or whatever if they made a couple more ECFs, made another finals? Sure. Miss me with it. They won a championship.
Yeah. He is Kurt Hoge. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He will be at American Family Field. The Brewers play the Reds for four games this week before they head back out on the road. Arizona, St. Louis.
It's going to be so hot, JR.
I know.
Arizona this weekend.
And then St. Louis coming back.
DoorDash me Icy's.
Okay. I will not do that, but I will definitely be thinking of you while I'm sitting in air conditioning. And we'll hopefully be back with a midweek this week and then back next week for Toddcast. It'll be on the point. I almost said the Point Forward podcast again on the Microbrew podcast. Now, stay tuned for my interview here with Cooper Pratt. Just 5 good minutes with the new Brewers shortstop, chatting with him early in the Cubs homestand. Thank you for listening, everybody, to this edition of Microbrew. We'll talk to you again later. Bye-bye.
All right, my guest is Cooper Pratt, shortstop, new shortstop for the Milwaukee Brewers. And Cooper, we start these conversations the same way every time. Where are you from? Where were you born and raised? And what did your parents do for a living?
Born in Hialeah, Florida, raised in Oxford, Mississippi. And my parents, you said, what do your parents do for a living?
Yeah, what do your parents do?
My dad's an accountant, and my mom is a doctor.
Ooh, what kind of doctor?
Family physician. She does everything but surgeries.
Okay, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
That's a cool
job. Yeah, she does everything. She's the GOAT.
Okay, when you you finally got here, you made your debut, was there a point where it got comfortable for you? Was there like, I know they sent you out before everybody else to start with, but like, was there a moment where
definitely it was more nerve-wracking the first game,
yeah,
and then it's slowly gotten better every game after.
Okay. I didn't know if there was like you needed a play in the field or just an at-bat to like just chill, relax.
Yeah, well, I mean, first game was pretty nerve-wracking, and then, I mean, not saying it's like amazing, but it's slowly getting better, and yeah, now it's getting way more comfortable.
Sure. Yeah. Who do you blame for the you going out before everybody else? Who is the architect of that?
I don't know. I think it was just a thing that they started.
That they've maybe done this to other players.
I've seen it done with other organizations.
Yeah.
I think it was Terang, I want to say.
That surprises me.
It was pretty cool. Not gonna lie. Like, I look back, no one was out there, and it was pretty cool being out there and turning around, looking around, seeing all the fans. So, I mean,
yeah, you kind of get a little ovation to yourself. You've told the story of the draft a few times, but can you kind of go back through that one more time? If you know your mind changed a bunch of times, or you did just want to go pro that whole time, and were kind of hoping for a team. Like how did the Brewers stay involved in all of that?
I hated the draft.
Really?
Draft sucked.
Not a fun process.
No, because I was supposed to go like one or two, first two rounds,
yeah,
maybe
for sure.
Third,
mm-hmm.
And crickets. I mean, obviously I wanted to play, but I mean, I wasn't going to, if it wasn't right, I was going to go play in college.
Yeah.
And sixth round rolls around, I was in line to get my parking pass, and they called me. And
at school, to get a parking pass at school?
Yeah, at school, and then they called me, and I realized I wanted to go play, and this was the open door, and I took the opportunity, and now I'm here.
So oh yeah, that worked out.
Yeah, I made the right choice for sure, but the whole process was, the whole draft process, I wasn't the biggest fan of.
Yeah, were the Brewers on you a lot? Like, was it not a surprise that they were there?
I mean, yes, and there were a couple teams that I thought were gonna, if I went past the second round, it was gonna be like, oh, okay, they'll take me to this pick, and then just nothing was heard.
Sure.
And then Brewers swooped in the sixth round, and
yeah, all right, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
When did they approach you on the extension? Like, what would you be willing to share on how that process came together?
Say it again.
On the extension, did they approach you first, or was that sort of a collaborative thing right at the beginning?
Just happened in spring training.
Sure.
Got with my people, and we worked out something going into the AAA season, and then it's all out now.
Yeah, for sure. Would you let Jacob Mizorowski throw an apple off of your, or try to hit an apple off of your head? Would you let him do that in real life?
He did do it in real life.
Well, I mean,
no, I'm just kidding. No, heck no. Heck no, I wouldn't let him do that.
His command's got a lot better, I
wouldn't let anyone do that. Even if they threw 50, I wouldn't let him do that.
That was pretty funny, though. You got to be part of kind of this viral moment.
Yeah.
The thumbs up, was that you or was that in the script?
That was me.
It was a very good addition to the whole thing. Give me the scouting report on Nashville, because the Sounds have a lot of guys who are really doing well right now.
They're all dudes.
Yeah.
Jet, dude. You got a bunch of Lara raking.
Yeah.
Luke's healthy again. Mm-hmm. I think he's doing pretty well. I just keep seeing highlights of all the guys.
Yeah.
Got a couple big leaguers down there. Pitching staff, good, great. I mean, the vibes are fantastic there.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a chance to clinch the first half.
Yeah.
I mean, all around. I mean, everyone there is a ball player, man.
Yeah.
They're all good.
Do you guys keep track of what's happening at the big? Do you have time to keep track of what's going on at the big league level, especially after you
I was in AAA?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, you pay attention, but you kind of still have to lock into your own. We still had practice and had games of our own. We'd look in when we could and watch the games that'd be on the TV, but you still have to take care of.
Yeah. No, of course. What's on your bucket list here in the immediate future? Something you still really want to get done here? In the next, maybe this next homestand, like maybe it's an extra base hit or something, a big play in the field. Like what's really weighing on you that you want to get done?
I want to get the homer out of the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to get that out of the way. I mean, I don't really care.
Sure.
As long as we win, but that'd be nice.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Cooper Pratt. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.